Well, welcome today to Cyber Threats in 2012 and what we can expect in 2013. My name is Heidi Richards-Mooney. I am the publisher and editor-in-chief of We Magazine for Women and founder of Women in E-Commerce. And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Adam Kajala, malware intelligence analyst with Malwarebytes, that's MalwareBytes.org. Welcome, Adam, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So before we get started, and my pleasure, before we get started, tell us a little bit about Malwarebytes and how it keeps us safe from unwanted threats, and then I'd like to just talk a little bit about the article that came out today.
Sure. Well, Malwarebytes is an anti-malware company, and our flagship product is Malwarebytes Anti-Malware. And what it is essentially an extension to your system's current malware protection or computer security. We built it with the intent of it running alongside other antivirus products. And basically, it detects malware in real time. It scans for any malicious files on your system. It also blocks malicious URLs that you might be headed to, and it does a pretty great job of it.
Absolutely. I've actually been a Malwarebytes fan for many years. I have a tech geek who handles all the problems I have on my computer, and I had like three major things happen last year, and he always makes sure that it's updated and everything. So I totally appreciate what you do. So let's talk a little bit about cyber threats. I read your article, Cyber Threats in 2012, Looking Both Ways, which of course just came out today, and I thank you for the advanced copy. And in it you say that the year 2012 was very important to pointing out that our privacy, anonymity, and security are entirely up for grabs when it comes to cyber threats. We face some of the most nefarious social engineering attempts and a serious shift in how people are becoming victims. So Adam, tell us about those threats and what threats we might face in 2013, beginning with these state-sponsored malware that I had never even heard about.
All right. So last year was very large, was very big and important for cyber threats because we saw a big influx in what is called drive-by exploits, which essentially is just websites that you could visit that would infect your computer with malware. We saw a very large uptake in that and what it was sending out to users. One of the threats is ransomware. We saw a lot of ransomware, which is basically malware that hijacks your system and demands that you pay a fine or a fee to get it back. We saw a lot of that. This year it was mainly masked as malware or software coming from the federal government or government agencies all over the world, saying that they detected something like viewing pornography or downloading illegal files or something like that, and telling the user that they have to pay this fine in order to get rid of the lock on their system. And a lot of people did it. A lot of users fell for that. So that was one of the biggest threats we saw. As far as state-sponsored malware goes, in the Middle East, we've seen a lot of state-sponsored malware. Kaspersky actually found a lot of it. Called Flame, and different kinds of different versions of state-sponsored malware out there, basically spying on governments, spying on government officials, grabbing massive amounts of information, and just basically collecting like James Bond malware that will go in and secretly steal information from governments, from organizations, and stay very well hidden. And we saw a lot of that this year. A few years back, you might remember a big piece of malware called Stuxnet that's related to the malware we saw this year, and we expect to see a lot more of it next year as well as it's being found. So those are the big things in 2012, drive-by exploits, ransomware, state-sponsored malware. And in 2013, we expect to see all those things happen again in larger numbers because drive-by exploits have been working fantastically. The exploits that are coming out are unique and ingenious, and they're being added to things called exploit kits, where it's basically just things that cyber criminals can buy and it will give them access to numerous types of exploits available to infect the system, infect the user system, at just a blink of an eye. And there's numerous, there's a lot of different exploit kits out there, and we've just watched them as they grow and as they continue to add more stuff on there. A few weeks ago, there was a very large Java exploit that was discovered and that had not been patched by Oracle, meaning that every single user that used Java was vulnerable to this attack, and it almost instantly got released into these exploit kits to be used by the common cyber criminal. And that's very dangerous stuff, and we're going to continue to see stuff like that keep growing and keep working against not only new exploits, but old ones too. In fact, most malware infections from drive-by exploits happen because the user has not updated their software. So they're old attacks that have been patched, that have been secured. However, the user has yet to update their software, like Java or Flash or something like that, and therefore they're vulnerable to this attack still.
So then, Adam, when these little pop-up boxes come up on your screen that say update your software, you recommend that we go in and update it, or how do we know it's even legitimate? Because I'll tell you why. I got the ransomware last year. That was one of the three infections I got. I was infected three different times, three different, totally different random things. And, oh, my God, I was just they were so clever. Now I don't click on anything. I've disabled all my pop-ups and just about everything. It's just, you know, you just have to be so careful. I guess, first of all, how did the average person can just buy these exploit kits on the market, or is this something that it's like an underground thing? And really, I mean, how do we know what to update and what not to update?
Well, the most concerning what they can buy, the most up-to-date stuff is usually pretty pricey. So you have cybercrime organizations that buy it. But the free versions, or at least the cracked versions, other cybercriminals will go in, they'll get themselves a copy of this, and then they'll make it so that anyone can use it, and they'll give it out for free. So it's pretty easy for the novice cybercriminal to go out, find an exploit kit for free, and use it. And it might be using older vulnerabilities, but like I said, most users are being infected with exploits that don't work on modern, on up-to-date software, but they work on the older stuff. And as long as they don't update, then they're going to keep getting infected by this kind of stuff. And as far as keeping things updated, following what your browser says, what your computer says, if Windows says it needs to update, you can check for a Windows update, make sure you do that. You can go to the website for Java and say, am I up-to-date? And it will check for you and tell you if you're up-to-date or not. And if you're not, it will point you in the right direction of actually updating. What we've been telling users lately is to disable Java in their browser, which just is really a simple task these days, just going into the add-ons part of your browser and just disabling Java. It's not a necessary tool for everyday Internet use. And you can still keep it installed on your system and update it on your system to play games that use Java or whatever else you need it for. But going straight to the source of the software itself, so going to Adobe's website for Flash, going to Oracle's website for Java, those are the best ways to find the most legitimate updates that you can.
Okay.
Same thing with Microsoft using their Windows Update Updater. And in addition to just updating your software for things like Java and things like that, you also want to keep your antivirus or any malware products up to date. You know, Malwarebytes has an option where it'll pop up at a set amount of time that you are able to configure. I myself have mine set for every single day. So it tells me you are one day behind on your updates. And I said, all right, click on it, and it'll update for you. Most users will ignore that little warning. They might be busy doing something else at the time. But
right.
It's a background process. It's very important, and it's very useful. So keeping things updated, just your antivirus, any malware, as well as your normal security products or normal products you use, is very important. It's going to be very important in the oncoming year.
Okay. So then, what's being done to protect the average internet user from all these threats?
There's numerous kinds of what I'm going to call task forces going out and being created that are trying to stop the spread of ransomware, the spread of what's known as malvertisements, which are malicious advertisements. And how those work is that a cyber criminal will create an account with a legitimate ad network. You'll see these ad networks are employed by like the most legitimate websites, CNET, other ones like that. And the websites will pay these ad networks to put a little piece of code on their website, and the ad networks will provide ads that they have, they have members and they have organizations that provide them ads, and they just cycle the ads through. Well, either way, the cyber criminals, they register with the ad networks for an ad, and they give them a legitimate ad, but then they're able to switch it out later without it being checked for any malicious content. So what happens is that you have these ads out there going on these legitimate ad networks and showing on legitimate web pages that actually have malicious code embedded inside of them, which either redirect or exploit the user so they get infected with malware. There's a lot of initiative against that, a lot of push for that. It's been going on for a few years. In addition to that, just the normal fighting power of the computer security community trying to come up with better ways of detecting malware, of detecting cyber exploits and malicious websites and things like that. In fact, the government itself, the U.S. government, is putting in methods to communicate more with the private computer security field in order to share information about malware, about cyber attacks, to try and two heads are better than one kind of thing. So that's the biggest push as far as protecting users beyond what we normally do of finding malware every single day and finding ways to stop it every single day. It's kind of a never-ending fight.
Yeah, I know, because it's hard to keep one step ahead of the criminals, isn't it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's what most users don't really seem to understand. You might think that, all right, if I buy a security product for my car, for instance, like a LoJack or something, then I'm safe forever. And that's not how it works with computer security. You have to keep things updated. You have to, add on your protections. And a company like our product, Malwarebytes, we push out up to 5 or 6, sometimes 15 new updates every single day for our product to update what we detect and how we detect it. Because the cyber criminals aren't slowing down on how fast they're developing new malware. So we can't slow down on how fast we're trying to stop new malware. So that's something that normal users really need to understand, and I hope they get it more this year than they did last year, because it's just even more important than it has been in the last decade.
So I want to go back real quick to the state-sponsored malware, because you mentioned it, but I'm wondering, is that something that the average person needs to worry about?
Not exactly. No, not really. The average person shouldn't have any concern about being infected by state-sponsored malware. However, that's not to say it doesn't ever happen. Stuxnet, which was kind of the first big state-sponsored malware that was discovered in the wild, was actually found on a lot of different systems that it just kind of spread out of control. However, it didn't destroy them. It didn't hurt them. And if these malware are, in fact, state-sponsored, meaning that intelligence agencies of different countries are developing them and gathering all of this data on the different systems, they're only looking for what's important to them and their mission. They're not looking for, what cat videos you watch on YouTube or anything like that. So even if the average user does get infected by some state-sponsored malware, the likelihood that any of the information that they have or that they'll keep the number on the system very long are very low. It's very unlikely that an intelligence agency in a foreign country is going to really care about the average user who doesn't have any contacts to government organizations. But nonetheless, if a user does work for something like like a power company or, you know, a water company, any of the resource companies or the government itself, in any way, shape, or form, or know someone, then there's that works for the government. That's also a possible method, way for them to get infected, or to be concerned about getting infected, because cyber criminals and hackers, they're going after governments, even other governments, will look at any method they can to get into the government's network. And so, you know, if let's say some evil malware from, you know, wherever country decides that they want to break into another country's network, and they can't, the other country has done a great job of securing the network. There's no way to get in via normal methods, and all of their employees are well-trained. Well, let's say that one of the employees' friends or family member frequents using their system or something like that. And the cyber criminal knew that. They can infect that friend or family member, which in turn might give them a chance to get to infect the employee, which in turn might give them a chance to infect the actual government network. So, I mean, it's espionage on a cyber level, but very much, you know, James Bond, secret agent kind of stuff, where this stuff will hide, this stuff will use all kinds of tactics and methods in order to get the information they need. And it'll stay hidden for a long time. All the stink-sponsored malware that we've seen has been running for years before it was found. So that's, you know, megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes of data being extracted from these organizations that have this malware affected for years and years, and nobody ever knew it was there. That's how stealthy they are.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
but the average user generally is.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, the average user generally doesn't really have to worry too much about that happening to them.
Well, that's good to know. They need to come up with a Lifetime or made-for-TV movie called Web Spionage so we can understand it and see what, you know, there's just so much. And I know I can remember way back when we heard about the first Trojans and viruses, and I was like, oh, my God, you freaked out. Nowadays, people are getting infected so quickly and so often that it's just become an everyday occurrence. Now, of course, we've gotten a lot more educated, but there's still a lot of vulnerability. So I want to talk a little bit about WordPress, for instance. I know a lot of people have WordPress websites. I've designed a few for clients, and I understand that WordPress have been extremely vulnerable. So how did they get hit? And Adam, what can we do about it?
Well, the biggest flaw with WordPress is not so much the WordPress product itself. It's how users are setting up their WordPress sites. They're doing it with improper credentials. They're not securing their web servers or the service they're using. Or they're using kind of shoddy third-party web hosting clients that don't really care about securing their users' websites. And so it makes an easy target for hackers, for cyber criminals who want to exploit their sites. So basically what will happen is that they'll just go, the cyber criminals will just go looking through different WordPress sites for one that's vulnerable to some well-known attack, but it hasn't been updated, it hasn't been patched from the user side, or the users hasn't done enough to secure their actual website. And they'll break in, they'll download or upload malicious code to that web server, to that website, and modify the actual WordPress page so that it exploits the, you know, it executes this malicious code on any user that comes by this website. And WordPress has been a big target for this just because a lot of people are using it, and a lot of people are not, they have no idea what they're doing when it comes to securing it. So it makes them easy targets.
Wow. So you recommend, I remember when I started getting hacked on all my WordPress sites, mostly it was, I don't know how they did it, probably through the servers, and I have a really good company that I've dealt with for now 5 or 6 years that, you know, probably is one of the top-notch. But even look at GoDaddy. I mean, they got hacked. I mean, anybody can really, it can happen to anybody. So, you know, you're not really 100% safe. You just have to do your own precautions. And
exactly.
One of the things that my web person at the time said to me is, you need to make sure that all your plugins are up to date, all of your you have the latest version of the theme you're using or WordPress and all of that. And that seems to help a little bit. I mean, you know, there's always, I don't think anything's 100% foolproof because they're, you know, like you said, those criminals, they're always one step ahead of us in some ways. And to stay ahead of them, it's just, it's a challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam, tell us about some of your other predictions for 2013.
Well, I mean, a big one was the mindset of the user and new ways in which cyber criminals are exploiting that. We've definitely seen a push over the last 10 years. You could look back 10 years and say, you know, a phishing email might consist of just some poorly worded email and a link or a file that you download and have to execute. And if people fell for it for a while, but then they just stopped because it was obvious that this was not a real email. This is a malicious email where it's trying to get you to give up, you know, some information or trying to get you to install something on your system. These days, not so much. These days, the emails that are being used are almost duplicate of the legitimate emails you might see from your bank or an airline or anything like that. Very well crafted, very well worded, and very good at hiding their true intent. So it's easy for users to fall for that kind of stuff these days. Ransomware, like I was talking about, is a great example of how cyber criminals are taking kind of a new approach where it's not so much about exploiting the technology anymore because the exploits are all there. And they come out all the time and you know, they change and, like I said, old ones work. But it's mostly more important now for cyber criminals to exploit the human being behind the screen. Make them trust you, make them believe that you're a legitimate source as far as the ransomware goes. Make them believe that you are actually a government, you know, organization that is giving you an option to, you know, get rid of your guilt, as it were, or accuses you of false guilt, is what I would call it, false guilt, where you think that, all right, maybe I did something wrong, I don't know for sure, but I couldn't say that I didn't, and therefore I might be wrong, I might be in the wrong here, and I should pay this fine just to be absolved of my guilt. And so they exploited that. There's malware out there that actually hijacked Skype accounts and went around with just one little line of message. It just said, "Lol, is this you?" And it had a link. And while that seems so simple, if you really put yourself in the shoes of someone being exploited by something like that, if someone trying to be fished, if you will, by something like that, where a friend of yours on Skype, popped up a message and said, "Is this you?" and give you a link. I mean, even me, being all the years that I've been in cyber, you know, security, kind of have a hard time not wanting to clink that. I want to see what he's talking about.
Oh,
is that me?
Right?
You know.
We have this. I had that last week. I had something. I can't even remember what it was. But, man, I kept looking at that thing over and over, and I didn't click on it. And I'm pretty sure it was a good thing I didn't.
That's good. So, yeah, that's the methods they're going. They're getting much smarter about trying to exploit people and not just their computers. It's about exploiting people. And we're going to keep seeing that. One prediction I had for ransomware was that ransomware in the form we know it now is going to go away. People are getting more and more savvy to what's going on as far as them disguising as government agencies and things like that and demanding money. And I think that the ransomware might go in a direction where cyber criminals will infect user systems, but instead of asking them to pay money, they'll ask them to do things like posting a link on their Facebook or spreading something around or hosting a file on their computer that can be downloaded later on by some other cyber criminal. Things like that, almost, or filling out surveys, which we've already seen ransomware that demands the user fill out a survey. So, I mean, it seems kind of simplistic, but when you think about it in the big picture, it's basically malware enslaving the user to do whatever they want, just so they can get back the use of their systems. And if you compare posting a link on your Facebook to paying $300, you know, most users will say, "I'll just post the link so I can get rid of this and go back to what I'm doing," until the malware keeps spreading or doing whatever else it needs to do. So So I can predict that that is probably going to happen, something similar along those lines, where it's no longer all about the money, but it's about making the user do what they want.
Wow. So in addition to some of the things that you mentioned to stay protected out there, such as keeping all your software up to date with the latest security patches and disabling things like Java and Flash, and never trusting any links and from others, what are some of the other things that we can do to stay safe online, Adam, from cyber threats?
Well, there's ad blocking software, plugins that you could add to your browser, which pretty much removes advertisements from the web pages you're looking at. And it's very effective because a lot of malicious code is spread through these ads, like I was talking about in the advertising. Pop-up blockers, of course, are pretty much built into every browser these days. Not all of them work that well, but some of them do. So always using those to stop just random pages popping up that you don't know where they go or what they do.
Do you have any ad-blocking software you recommend? Any particular brand, or do you just say surf the internet and find one? I mean, because how would we know which one to get if we, you know, I know there's free like FileHippo that you can download a lot of freeware, and of course, I mean, just give us some ideas of where we'd search for this stuff.
Well, your browser should have kind of an add-on market. Firefox does, Google Chrome does, Internet Explorer might. And you should just search on there, search for the highest reviewed ones. I use Firefox, and I use AdBlock Plus, which if you just type in AdBlock into the Firefox add-on search, it'll be the first one that pops up.
Okay.
And it has the best ratings. And it's free. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of them that are free. I know a lot of the things I use. I actually end up upgrading to the like I have CC Cleaner and Defragler and Malwarebytes, and I just got another one. And I end up upgrading to the more secure, because with 3 times my computer's been down for whatever reason, or my websites, I don't want to take any chances. So, because giving my computer to my geek for a week doesn't make any sense, you know. So, it helps somewhat. I don't want to jinx myself and say anything else, but you know, I feel a little bit more protected. So go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What else?
No, that's ad blocking software. Just being generally proactive when it comes to security, rather than reactive. Installing software after the fact that you've been infected. It's all out there. It's all very easy to get on your system. And doing things like updating or just installing secure software can really go a long way to keeping your personal information safe and your system from being, you know, infected.
Okay, great. So you mentioned something about if you really want to stay safe, employ the use of a virtual machine, a sandbox application. What is that? And what do you mean by that?
Basically, an operating system running inside of your operating system that doesn't connect to your operating system. So I'm going to put that in simpler terms. The easiest method is something called Sandboxy, and it's software that kind of creates a virtual operating system on your system, and you can use your browser or any other application through it. And anything that gets saved to the operating system, like files or whatever, if an exploit on a website gets executed and tries to download malware onto your system, Sandbox will catch that and won't let it install. Or if it does install, it'll install on a virtual system, so not a real one. And once you close Sandboxy, it deletes all everything, so you don't have to worry about that. So that's one method. The other one is using actual virtual machine, like VMware or VirtualBox, but that's a bit more advanced, a bit too advanced for the average user.
Okay, great. So if you could just give one piece of advice about cyber threats for 2013, Adam, what would that be?
always double check everything. don't click
the link
and listen to where it's going.
I thought you were going to say don't click on anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Double check everything. Good. And make sure everybody that you get Malwarebytes, go to malwarebytes.org because it really is a wonderful company. And Adam, I want to thank you for taking time to tell our readers about cyber threats and what we can expect in 2013.
Right.
And I'll be sure to send them the link to the article on your blog, Cyber Threats in 2012, Looking Both Ways. Is that malwarebytes.org/blog? Or would they just go to malwarebytes.org and find it?
It's blog.malwarebytes.org.
Blog.malwarebytes.org. Got it. Fabulous. And we've been talking to Adam Kajawa from Malwarebytes. He's a malware intelligence analyst and intelligence analyst. And Adam, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you if they had any more questions, or is there someone you would direct them to in your company if they had any questions about the cyber threats or anything?
We have support forums that talk to our users 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we'll answer questions about protecting your system or getting rid of malware you already have. So it's just forums.malwarebytes.org.
Excellent. And I've actually used them once and very responsive. So thank you again. Again, Adam, thank you so much for being with us, and I'm going to make sure I post your article onto our website, We Magazine for Women, and also I'll make a mention of it in my next article on women in e-commerce. This is Heidi Richards Mooney, and thank you very much, everyone, for listening in today. Thank you, Adam.
All right. Thanks a lot. No problem.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.